Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome into another edition of the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast. It's Monday morning. It's football and random things. It's 9:06 a.m. And Jeff Woody, the last 3 days have felt like they took 2 weeks. It has seems like it's been a long time since the Cyclones destroyed the Horned Frogs on Friday afternoon at Jack Trice Stadium in the regular season finale. But oh my goodness, have things happened.
I don't know who they are and what room they got in. But can we just give a round of applause just to the script writers of the 2021 college football season generally? Like, just the plot twists are incredible. I mean, you introduce new characters. There's going to be, you know, a Cincinnati character. He's really creative. I mean, it's different. There's potentially an Oklahoma State. You have a cowboy that's going to be fun. Like, it's up there. The monoliths, those things have moved a little bit, like Ohio State, that one's moved. Your Clemson, that one moved. I mean, the turns, and also like introducing the WWF heel of Texas and Oklahoma. And then like right away, just shitting all over Texas the whole season. Like that is, it's just, you have a punching bag. Like it's a really good thematic device. It's awesome. And then the Oklahoma, like you build them up, you know, you introduce this new character inside that subplot inside that character, and then get all the way to the end and then just pull the rug out from underneath them. I mean, just what a beautiful arc. I would just want whoever the script writers are for the 2021 college football season, just bravo. You deserve an Emmy. If you don't get it, you should anyway. Just wonderful, wonderful job.
I just wish that they had given our main character a little bit better of a treatment during this season.
Yeah, but you know what? They have to learn lessons. this is like season three. You know, it's like it's of a 6 or 7 episode or a 6 or 7 season run where the character is has started to find a little bit of success, and you know, but then finds out the hard way that you have to, you know, certain things have to go a little bit different, but they learn from it and then advance towards the thing they want. So you want this, the character have been treated better, but you just keep coming back. You just keep coming back.
It's like, what is it? Season 2 of Friday Night Lights, when Coach Taylor leaves for the college job for a while. And then he comes back to Dylan. And then they like make it back to the state title game and lose in a heartbreaker after winning the state title the year before. And they returned everybody. You know, it's like that.
It's that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you need those moments to help you understand how much you should cherish the special ones.
Exactly. Yeah. You have to have the down. There is no light without darkness. There is no up without down. So, you know, you have to have the downsides, but it just thematically, and just, yeah, the Oklahoma turn, just wonderful. Just wonderful.
All right. Should we start with, the Cyclones win over TCU on Friday, or should we work backwards?
I think we need, the big news to me, I mean, the big news in college football is Lincoln Riley to USC. That is the big news, which I, for one, and now, I mean, shtick aside, I think it's a terrific fit. I think Lincoln Riley at USC is absolutely perfect. I mean, he's a young guy who doesn't mind cameras, which if you're going to be at Southern California, like you have to be okay with that. So young guy doesn't mind cameras, is an offensive first coach. So you're going to be able to put a fun product on the field. The Pac-12 South sucks. So you can really quickly take a team from whatever they were, 4-8, 5-7, or whatever they ended up at this year, immediately take them from being pretty bad to being at least competitive for the South championship. Andy already recruits the hell out of California. I mean, that's where Spencer Rattler and Caleb Williams came from, as well as a fair number of the rest of their like high level skill guys.
Rattler's from Arizona, but your point still stands.
Yeah, is that he recruits out of California, and let's call it Arizona. Like, he recruits the West Coast really, really well. So he's already got the connections there. He's already got like the kind of vibe of what a USC coach should be. I think it's a perfect fit. Now, if I'm in Norman, I am livid, absolutely livid. But if I'm in Los Angeles, or just generally an onlooker that's not in Norman, I think it's a great fit.
Yeah. And this was like an all-time heel turn, because just when you thought Lincoln Riley was like, okay, I'm in, I'm staying at OU, I'm not going to go to LSU or wherever it may be. And then it would be where, you know, at the end of episode 9 in a 10 episode run would be Lincoln Riley saying that I'm staying at Oklahoma, not going to LSU. And then at the end of episode 10, you would get the ultimate cliffhanger where Lincoln Riley dips and goes to USC. And it turns out that it's all, like I said, it's all just been sleight of hand, and it's all just been a distraction from what's actually happening. A red herring, you know, we've all been chasing this one rumor just for something completely else to help happen. But I agree with you. I mean, I think that he's going to do really well there. It's just crazy how the best things that happen in college football happen like in the dead of night, when, you know, when you would think that nobody is watching. And then it turns out that there's three reporters posted up with a video camera at a private airport in Tulsa, prepared at 5:30 in the morning to see Lincoln Riley, Alex Grinch and company hopping on a private jet to Los Angeles, you know?
And yeah, best laid plans, man. Like it is funny too, just because, I read an LA Times article when the Campbell to USC, when that was at full swell, like Saturday morning, mm-hmm. when it was basically like, yeah, it's a done deal, Campbell's going to USC, like that, when that whole thing was going, I read an LA Times article, and one of the author of that, and I forget his name, so I apologize to that author for not citing it correctly. But one of the things he talked about is you have to acknowledge that recruiting a coach now is different than recruiting a coach was 20 years ago. Like, and Fickell and Campbell and Aranda are kind of the perfect example of that, where none of those three guys, at least when you dig all the way through the indicator, all the way through like what truly is, they don't seem like they're interested in just jumping to a job. Now, that doesn't mean that none of them will ever leave, and we don't know any inside information regarding that. But it doesn't seem like a guy would leave Cincinnati, Waco, or Iowa State or Ames to go to Los Angeles. But 20 years ago, I mean, that's without question, you're going to bounce to go do that. But like, it is different. And I think guys are realizing this, or at least a fair number of coaches are realizing that if you have a good situation where you are, that is much better to be at than trying to bounce from job to job to job to job to job. Otherwise you end up like Lane Kiffin, you know, and you end up being there for 2-3 years and you end up getting fired, but you get a hefty paycheck. So like it is interesting. And the reason I say that is because like Norman, like Oklahoma, is as pedigreed as any university, any program is in the country. I mean, if you look at top to bottom, it's like Alabama, Notre Dame, Michigan, Ohio State, Texas, OU, USC. Like that's the top of the top. And someone just bounced from Oklahoma in the dead of the night to take what would air quotes be a better job. You know, like if that ain't a gut punch, I don't know what is. But at the same time, Luke Fickell has turned down all of these jobs to stay at Cincinnati. So like, it is just a different environment that you have to kind of consider, that coaches are now looking at it a different way. At least a lot of them are looking at it a different way of, I like Fickell has 6 kids, which that's a whole litter. So he has 6 kids and he's like, do I want to uproot my children to take another job that I may or may not enjoy when I know that I like this one? How much money is too much money? You know, how much money is it worth for me to go completely leave the thing that I have committed to go do this other thing? And so, yeah, it is a bit of a different coaching search now, that it's not like guaranteed that guys are going to be moving to find the higher level job once they get to a job they like. So it is interesting. you know, that someone's going to bounce from out of Norman to go to USC when no one would ever leave Norman 20 years ago. Like, that is a destination. So yeah, it's just an interesting flip on its head of what you would expect.
I mean, I think that these coaches are probably getting smarter about understanding, you know, what's a good job and what's a bad job. And at the end of the day too, like, I think a lot of these things are shifting just as the sport changes. You know, I think the reality is that if you're in the Big 12 right now, especially after this Lincoln Riley news, you know that there, the door is open for you to, especially knowing too that Oklahoma and Texas are going to leave the league in the not so distant future. It's like, man, we can angle this and take advantage of this, and we could become the powers of the future Big 12, mm-hmm. you know? And I mean, I think right now today, if you had to sit and handicap that, who we're going to be the 5 years from now, what are the three or four best programs in the league? I mean, I think if everything stayed the same, it would be hard to sit there and not say Iowa State's got a really good chance to be in that group. Baylor Oklahoma has a really State. Good chance to be in that group. Oklahoma State, Cincinnati is probably in that same mm-hmm. conversation. And then BYU. I think and BYU and TCU. Like, I think those are the other ones mm-hmm. that's like, when you look at the coach that they have right now, you look at the trajectory of the program, all of those, I think, have opportunities right now to kind of solidify their stance as being at the top of the league perennially.
And let's not ignore Kansas State. So you also have, I mean, Klieman, who, yes, this is fourth year, and they have not done everything like to the top that you actually wanted to, but that dude's won like 15 national championships, where as soon as you get installed the thing that he wants to do, if they get on a roll, I mean, if they get situated in a way that they feel like they can actually comfortably operate, I mean, that is, I feel like Klieman, what his end goal would be is Michigan this year. Like, the way that Michigan plays this year is really dominant run game, really good defensive line play, quarterback play that's good enough. Like, and if he can get, imagine dropping Michigan. Now, granted, Kansas State's not going to pull the recruits that Michigan will, but imagine dropping Michigan into the Big 12 right now. And that's basically what the dream for Klieman would be. So like, this conference is going to be really strong, but to your point, without Oklahoma, because I mean, we were talking before we started, when Lincoln Riley in the day, the 24 hours since Lincoln Riley has officially accepted the job at USC, their recruiting rankings went from what, seventh in the country after what, five or six decommits, to like 15th in 24 hours. They just dropped just like a brick. And so like, that maybe whoever comes in next, maybe they do a good job and maybe they rescue it. And maybe they're able to kind of pull everything together and, you know, do the thing that you keep Oklahoma as Oklahoma. But maybe they don't. And at this point, yeah, where would you rather be? Would you rather be at LSU, who you're going to have to play Alabama, Texas A&M, Auburn, Georgia, all those every year? And you get the bottom half of the SEC, so that's kind of nice. But you still also have to play those teams every year. So you're not going to win. I mean, maybe you do, but you're going to have to scrap to beat Alabama, Auburn, Georgia every year. Or you could be at Cincinnati like Luke Fickell and you get to play in the Big 12 where that's the competition that you've got, which is still quality, but the door is swung. You're not going to have to play Nick Saban every year. So like, yeah, it is, to bring it back to the original point, it is a good job, air quotes, good job is different now than it was 20 years ago.
Yeah. As I look at it right now, Oklahoma's class was number 7 nationally coming into yesterday. That group is now down to 11. I think they've lost 2 commitments in the 2022 class. They now have the number 2 class in the Big 12. And then Iowa State is right behind them at number 3, which is insane for Iowa State to have the number 3 recruiting class in the conference. But, man, it feels like it was a seismic moment. I think one that we'll probably look back on for years as being a major like landscape shifting move for all of college football, because I'm interested to see what dominoes fall now, what players that might've ended up at Oklahoma end up elsewhere that wouldn't mm-hmm. have, if Lincoln Riley had still been the head coach there. And we don't know who Oklahoma's coach is going to be. So who leaves Oklahoma yeah. that is, you know, someone that can make an impact elsewhere. I don't think it's a slam dunk that everyone will go to USC. You know, I'm sure that there will be a handful of kids that will, but you never know. Someone could open up that door and then all of a sudden they end up somewhere completely different, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think the other thing that's interesting, is we talk about, like, you know, the joke that, again, the shtick of the script writers, but like one of the reasons why Lincoln left was because he didn't agree with the move to go to the SEC. He didn't want to do it. He talked to the administration about not doing it and voiced his displeasure about it. So that, you talk about a seismic moment, is when Texas and Oklahoma announced that they're going to the SEC and that tried to form the Super League. And you have the head coach of Oklahoma saying, this is a stupid idea, who would theoretically stand to benefit from it the most, because he would have access to, you know, that everyone's going to tout out. You have all the money and this is your TV revenue, which is, again, the only argument that a bad SEC team has, you know, is, oh, we make more money. Congratulations. You won 3 wins. Congratulations. Good job, buddy. But if you have that guy saying that this is a bad idea, then the concept of that SEC Super League that everyone was really scared of a couple of years ago, when the person who stands to benefit from it the most wants to leave that, to me, that says a lot about what the future of that thing is, and that it is not quite as destined to succeed as many thought that it actually would be. Is, you know, you get 32 teams in the SEC, dude's going to the Pac-12. And now, granted, you could still end up with USC getting gobbled up by some other thing once in 2025 or 2024 when the TV rights are up and everything rescrambles. That might still happen. And it probably, things are still going to shift around a lot. But again, I think just that Lincoln Riley thing, moving to USC away from the move to the SEC, that to me is part of this seismic moment. Just because of what that says about the insider's perception of what that deal was actually going to look like. So yeah, I think that this little microcosm of what Texas and OU did, what Lincoln Riley then bounced out of that, like that season, tracking that little through line is going to be a really interesting retrospective when you go back and look at it 10 years from now.
And I think there's a reality too that, if you're Lincoln Riley, you sit there and look at it and yeah, the SEC is really good. Like, I'm not going to sit here and pretend the SEC is not good, you know, but there's also a lot of teams that, you know, there's going to be the couple dominant teams, but there's also going to be a bunch of teams that have to go 6-6 or 7-5 for those dominant mm-hmm. teams to be able to exist, you know? Mm-hmm. So even if you expand the playoff to 12, it's not this slam dunk that all of a sudden you're going to get, you know, 4 teams into the playoff. Because how often are those teams going to have good enough records to be ranked that high if they're losing 3, 4, 5 games in a season? You know, you don't just all of a sudden be like, man, our league has got 2 teams better, you know, that are on paper supposed to be 2 of the best programs. Wow. Now everybody's going to go 11-1. Like, that's just not mathematically possible, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what, like, I think people maybe didn't understand.
Like Mississippi State is a good example of that. They were the 25th or 18th, 24th, somewhere in there, like a ranked team who, if push comes to shove, they're not even going to get to a New Year's Six, and they're a darn good team. But because they had to play all the top dogs in the SEC, which I think that the SEC and the Big Ten have a pretty similar structure to me in that the top is really, really good and the bottom is really, really bad, where the Big 12 is, you have... I think I would put Oklahoma State in that really, like, really, really good category. Baylor and Oklahoma and Iowa State, I would group together, despite the records, would be like in the pretty good stage, where they would end up being like an Ole Miss in that, where they're going to be just below the top tier. But the rest of the conference in the Big 12 is really, really good, except Kansas and I would say TCU this year. But you have this kind of spread between the top and the bottom. And if you're not in that top 2 or 3 in either conference, I mean, look at Ohio State. Ohio State is probably one of, if you were to have a tournament, a 64 team tournament, that's a Final Four team. Like, they're going to win their way through to get to the Final Four. Again, it's not physically possible, but just in a hypothetical situation, they are probably one of the best 4 teams in the country. But because they play in the Big Ten East, which has 3 dominant teams, and Penn State, who's pretty darn good, and then a bunch of crap. And you have but you have that top that you have to fight through, which would be the situation that Oklahoma is going to end up in when they go to the SEC, where you have this top where you've got your LSUs, your Alabamas, your Georgias, Florida every once in a while, your A&M every once in a while. But then you have the bottom and you got your Vanderbilt, like, cool, you know, that kind of, you're going to be able to win through the bottom, but you can't be in the top every single year. So yeah, we talked about it earlier. The Pac-12 South isn't very good. I mean, who is the best? I don't even know who's representing the South in the championship game.
Utah.
Arizona State? Utah. So you got Utah representing the South in the Pac-12 championship game to play Oregon. Okay. You got to beat Utah. Physical, tough team, but that's one. Like, UCLA is going to get better under Chip, but they're not great. Arizona State has the chance to be good every once in a while, but if you're measuring yourself against Arizona State and UCLA and Utah, it's a lot different than measuring yourself against Alabama, Georgia, and Texas A&M.
And at the end of the day, too, I think that the reality of that situation is it's going to be Oregon and USC pulling away from the league, you know, and that's assuming that Oregon continue to recruit well, where Oregon has had a great deal of success in Southern California.
Yeah.
When Oregon has been really good, it's because they've been able to have a great deal of success in Southern California. That's what Chip was able to do so well when Oregon was really rolling in the, you know, early 2010s and late 2000s. If that all of a sudden is gone, USC will be the dominant power in that league, and there won't be anybody who can come close to them.
Yeah. I feel like UCLA with Chip has a chance to be pretty good, but there's got to be a lot of things that happen in a row for that to actually, you know, for them to manifest in the same way that we expect Lincoln Riley to get USC to manifest. Just, I don't know, for whatever reason. I mean, I've been to the UCLA campus, and if anyone, you should recruit Southern California if you're playing, if you're coaching at UCLA. But also, if you brought a kid, like if you brought a high level kid from Missouri to the UCLA campus and said, you can go here for free, sign me up right now. I mean, it's a gorgeous campus. It's freaking in Beverly Hills, like right down Rodeo Drive. But I don't know. It's neither here nor there. But I don't know. The whole Lincoln Riley thing as a general theme is a really interesting future retrospective.
Yeah. This will be a great oral history in like 10 years.
Yeah. And also, I think the other thing that's going to be interesting, and we mentioned this a little bit before recording, is how much of, and so we know that there are certain elements that this is 100% true. We don't know what is true and crap until you get all the way through it. Agents for sure use certain rumors. They will start certain rumors to create leverage for their client in some other situation. So how much of the news that we've heard regarding the LSU job, regarding the USC job, regarding the Florida job, whatever, regarding certain guys, how much of that is true and ever had any legs, and how much of it was complete fabrication from whoever Lincoln Riley's agent is, or Billy Napier's agent, or whatever, whoever. We don't know how much of it was, like, how close was Dave Aranda to getting any job. Maybe he never actually even remotely entertained it. Like, and that might be true. And the same thing with Campbell. Like, maybe he was close, maybe he wasn't. And I don't know, even at this point. And I think we can probably clarify that in a second, but like, how much, another interesting layer of this is how much of this was really potentially going to happen, and how much of it was complete and total crap made up by an agent.
Yeah. The thing we know about Campbell is, you know, I think I'm okay to say that we know that the staff was working yesterday, and it seems as though everything is trending in Iowa State's direction in that way for Matt Campbell to get an extension or a restructure of his contract or something like that. I would not be shocked at all to see that come through within the next 24 hours. I don't know if it will be today. I don't know if it will be sometime on Tuesday, but I would be very surprised if we get late into the week and we have not gotten full details on that. We're not going to find out what happened with any of the other stuff, at least not now. It may be sometime later on in the offseason, once, you know, Chris can do a podcast with Coach Campbell, or when we finally get opportunities to you know, do sit downs with them or something like that again. I could maybe see that happening, but for now, we're probably not going to hear anything on that end. But like I said, at this point, Iowa State is in a good position from everything that we know. And Matt Campbell seems to be good to go for at least one more year. You know, that's the thing. Every time that we do this, we've got to say, well, we've got at least one more, you know, and you never know too. Obviously Coach Campbell has been coveted by NFL teams. The NFL hiring cycle has not really arrived yet. So who knows, you know, but as of right now today on November 29th, 2021 at 9:31 AM, we're safe. I think.
Yeah. At least again, nothing's locked in. The DEFCON level has just gone from DEFCON 1 and just gone down to like DEFCON 5. It's still
maybe more like we're maybe more like DEFCON 4, DEFCON 3.
Okay. Okay. You know? So yeah, it's not, we're not off the list yet. And it's not something like, all right, until that, until there's ink to paper that says, yep, I'm going to be back, then we don't know for sure. So like maybe by the time this you're listening to this podcast, that's already happened. And maybe not, we don't know, but like the, again, trending towards Iowa State being a good position. So I don't know. I feel like that's a decent place to end the coaching conversation. Cause we got a lot of seniors and a lot of Breece Hall to talk about regarding TCU.
Absolutely. And there was also a very exciting Saturday in college football with rivalry week and everything. We're going to talk about all of that stuff when we come back on Football and Random Things here on the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast Network. Welcome back into Football and Random Things here on the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast Network. Jerry Stansbury, Jeff Woody. All right. Continuing in the working backwards theme, let's just touch on these two games, the big games from Saturday, actually three big games from Saturday that I thought were really interesting. And then we will get to the Cyclones in their big win on Friday. Oklahoma State is going to the Big 12 title game with a bedlam win over Oklahoma. The final nail in the Lincoln Riley coffin, per se. Michigan, in one of the absolute all-time great scenes, I think, in college football history, with snaps an eight-game losing streak to Ohio State, now number two in the AP poll. I'd be surprised if they're not the number two team in the college football playoff rankings this week, and they will play Iowa in the Big Ten championship game on Saturday. And then Alabama in four overtimes with a win over Auburn. We had to go to our little two-point conversion weirdo thing that we're doing this year, and I don't envision lasting for more than 1 year.
That's going to change.
Yeah, it is so stupid, dude. It is so stupid. And I don't know what the right answer is. I think maybe you just give people – you give teams one set of downs. You start at the 10, and you say, all right, work your way from the 10. You know,
well, I think that's how high school overtime works just, it's one set of downs from the 10 yard line in. And I think you can even put the stipulation as like two overtimes. We're just going to do it like we always did it. Like is you could go from the 25, go on in. Mm-hmm. And then at overtime number three is you start at the 10, you can't kick a field goal. Go like, all right, well, that's going to lead to some drama and likely going to lead to, I don't know, a quicker end to the overtime period. Cause if you have to get in the end zone, you can't kick a field goal. The odds of you scoring a touchdown from the 10 are much slimmer than getting lucky on a 2-point play from the three. So I don't know, but that there's no way that rule lasts two more years.
No, absolutely not. What were your final thoughts from Saturday? What jumped out to you in any of those games?
I thought just overarching theme is the difference between being a playoff team and being a really good team is actually really small. Mm-hmm. Like that. And the example, I think the easiest example is the Oklahoma, Oklahoma State game. I mean, now granted, there's still some things that need to happen. I mean, Georgia has to beat Alabama because if Georgia doesn't beat Alabama, then it'd be Georgia, Alabama, Big Ten champ. Well, Michigan, if Iowa wins, there's no way they're in. Michigan and Cincinnati. I mean, Cincinnati has probably got themselves a pretty comfortable position in there because if they beat Houston. So if they end up, if they're undefeated and they've run through everything, they did what they did last year, like they deserve the chance to be in there. So that's probably your four. Oklahoma State would probably be the odd man out. But if either Cincinnati or Alabama lose, then Oklahoma State, if they win, are pretty much guaranteed to be. There's no one else that really holds a candle to that shot. So Oklahoma State would theoretically be in. So you go the difference between Oklahoma State being in and Oklahoma potentially being in that same situation. And Oklahoma is going to be ranked when the playoff rankings come out. I bet they're going to be like 11th or something like that. Like still in the top 12, maybe not drop down a lot, but the guy, I think number four for Oklahoma, I forget the receiver's name, Caleb Williams zipped a pass on, it was like third downs right before he got sacked to end the game. And his toe was on the white line. Like clearly it was on the white line, but like an inch on the white line, and he caught the ball but was out of bounds. Play didn't count. Next play's a sack. Oklahoma loses. Lincoln Riley's gone. The whole thing. Oklahoma is up in flames because that dude's foot was 2 inches away. Now, granted, not every game is going to be like that, but just giving a little bit of, to me, it gives a little bit of solace and reprieve to Iowa State season, knowing that like, when you look at the thin, tiny margins, like you have to be good enough to be considered even in the conversation. Like you can't, the difference between being Kansas and being Oklahoma State is huge, but the difference between being Iowa State and being Oklahoma State is pretty small. Like it is two or three plays here or there. It's one drop pass here or there. It's one penalty here or there. And like the difference is so small between being in that high level and being just really, really good. So I don't know. That's the big overarching thing to me. And then the other thing is I always, and I think a lot of Iowa State fans, just by nature of being an Iowa State fan, kind of immediately pull for the underdog. And it's weird to think that Michigan falls into the category of being an underdog, but Ohio State has been such a juggernaut for the last like 10 years that they've not really had the chance to, I don't know, push anyone. Like no one's been able to get Ohio State off the top of the mountain. And so like Michigan served the role as the underdog. But it's good to see, like, again, let's say Georgia beats Alabama. Then your teams would be Georgia, who's been there before, Michigan, who's never been in the playoff before, Cincinnati, who's never been in the playoff before, and Oklahoma State, who's never been in the playoff before. So are Clemson and Alabama and Ohio State, are they still really good? Sure they are. But you have this new kind of influx of teams that are showing the sports media elites that it is not just the teams that you think are good. So I don't know. Those are the two general overarching things that I thought about, which are, yeah, it's so close between being really good and being just an elite team. And then how the underdogs are starting to flip the script a little bit this year to say like, no, man, it's not just one team that's going to be taking care of this.
It'll be interesting to see if that carries over now. Obviously this year was a little bit different with as many teams having the super seniors and things like that. There were a lot of veteran teams in college football this year. How does that change when those guys are gone? You know, do we see this playing field leveling be like a lasting thing, or is it something that just exists for 1 year basically? Like that's what I think. And we don't know an answer to that today, but that's the kind of thing that I think will be interesting to track in the coming years.
Yeah. And if it does, I feel like it's just good for college football, you know, like just generally the more chance that your team has to be whatever successful goal is your goal, you know, like I think Kansas fans would love to be in the running for a Big 12 championship. Like, could you imagine if Kansas got to the point where they were like, even as good as Iowa State, if they got to that level where consistently you're expecting to win every game. And so like, that's the goal. And so the more likely your team is to achieve that goal, the better off the whole sport is, because then each game matters more. I mean, you think about Saturday, the important games on Saturday, they just went one after the other, Ohio State, Michigan in the morning. And then you had Wisconsin, Minnesota, which is going to determine the Big Ten championship or Big Ten West champion. After that, plus the Iron Bowl, which is always going to be important when Alabama's kind of, or either one of them is going to be up there. And then obviously Oklahoma and Oklahoma State and Bedlam. And it was just important game after important game after important game, because it's not just three teams that are like, well, We know that Alabama and Ohio State and Clemson are going to be in. Who's going to be the fourth team that gets their ass whooped right away and then move on? So it's just generally better when there is so much more openness to me, because yeah, it gives Wisconsin, Minnesota much more meaning, because it's not just this completely foregone conclusion that Ohio State's going to be in.
I think we have the best chance, or we have a good chance to have our best year of the playoffs since probably the first year, 2014. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that, I mean, if it's who it looks like it will be right now, if it's, you know, Georgia, Michigan, Cincinnati, and Oklahoma State. I mean, I don't know if Oklahoma State, if they were the four seed, I don't know if they would beat, Georgia. I think that they'd give them a solid game, though. And I think Cincinnati and Michigan would be a good game, you know? Like, I think any way that you shake it out with those top four, I think that that's going to be a fun playoff, you know? Mm-hmm. And just the element of having three teams that have never been there before, and then one that's never won that has not won the national championship in 30, 40 years, like, that's fun, you know? That's really fun to have just these new people around. And like Georgia, who is a monster and has been really good in football for a while, obviously, and has been right up there in that conversation. Like, for them, it's like, okay, can they get over the hump? But you have to wonder if there will be people who are like, well, that's a discounted championship because Alabama wasn't there, Ohio State wasn't there, Clemson wasn't there, like all these kinds of things. And it's just like, it's goofy. Like, you know, there will be people who are goofy about it, but I think to the casual college football fan, it will be considerably more fun.
But the good news for Georgia regarding that is
they have an opportunity.
Basically, Georgia's in right now. Like, they're in. Even if they lose, unless they get embarrassed. If they lose by 50, then maybe not, but I still think that they're probably in. But they're going to have to go through Alabama, and they're going to have the chance to essentially, like, stamp Alabama out of the playoff and to sort of legitimize their way in. You know, like, yes, Ohio State's not there, Clemson's not there, but no one would look at Clemson this year and say, man, that team deserves to be in. And even Ohio State, I think McShay said they should be in even after their loss. But, like, realistically, you lose twice. There's only four teams. There's 130 to choose from. Mathematically, it's just not going to happen. Like, could they execute the playoff? And could theoretically they win a tournament if you put eight teams out there and Ohio State's one of them? Sure, they could. But they didn't. And if they couldn't beat Michigan, they probably wouldn't beat Georgia. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it's good for Georgia that they can go through Alabama. If in fact they do get through Alabama, to say, like, no, there is no doubt about this. We got in and we pushed Saban out. Done.
All right, let's talk about the Cyclones. Iowa State with a 48-14 win over TCU on Friday afternoon at Jack Trice Stadium, senior day. It was a fun day, man, just to see all the seniors get out there and play one more time. But man, it was a junior that stole the show.
Did you mean to Gus Johnson that?
I mean, no, kind of. I don't know. I kind of float in and out of Gus Johnson sometimes.
Stole the show.
Yeah, I kind of float in and out of the Gus Johnson sometimes. I've done that voice so many times now that I just, like, it just comes.
It's a part of you.
Yeah, it's just part of me. Gus is just in my heart so much that, you know, every once in a while he comes out. But, man, 28, dude. Kids special. Like, if that's the really last time we ever watch 28 play in an Iowa State uniform, man, it will be it would be hard to ever top that one. Let's put it that way. I think Brees had like 250 something yards of total offense.
It's 281. 281 of total offense.
Yeah, 281 yards of total offense and four touchdowns. And if you were a Doak Walker Award winner. Or
none of them, by the way, none of them were easy. There was none of the touchdowns. I think maybe the first one, like, but the rest of the big plays, it wasn't like it was super well blocked beyond everything. And he didn't have to do anything. You know, he could just kind of glide in the end zone. Like, he had to work for each one of those. And each time he touched the ball, he did something exceptionally special with it. And I don't know. That was the first time that I was able to just be a fan, because, and we record the pregame show a little bit early, especially with Thanksgiving. We didn't want to, like, have to do that on Thanksgiving Day. So we recorded the pregame show a little bit early, and then I had TV on Saturday morning, but the game was on Friday. So I literally could just be a fan. And it was, I don't know, it was just so much fun that game was the game that you could just sit and be a fan. and like just stand up and be like, what in the world did I just watch and how did he do that?
Yeah. There was one play that he made. It was like a 15-yard reception where he caught the ball and did a spin move immediately after he caught it and then reversed field and went back and I think got pushed out of bounds on the Iowa State sideline. And it was like, that was a moment where you're like, man, I mean, I don't know. There's been a lot of those moments where he does those things where you're like, damn, like that's different, you know? But even on a day when he was different on every play, it seemed like he made this one play where you're just like, I mean, if that's what he's on, then you're not going to beat Iowa State. You know,
that to me, the play that I saw that was the most holy nuts was it was a 17-yard run. I think it just preceded his receiving touchdown. And it was, I mean, nothing. There was penetration in the backfield. There was linebackers that didn't get the offensive line, didn't get to the second level. And the dude turned nothing. And it was just like five TCU defenders almost comically set up to tackle him and makes all of them miss and gets a 17-yard gain. And when you watch the butt angle of it, it's like he had no business getting a yard and he got 17. And I text, you know, the group chat that I have with Spears and Arnaud and A-Rob. And I text them like, that is that clip, that 17-yard clip is going to be when they announce and the 31st overall pick in the 2022 NFL draft, Breece Hall, Iowa State. Like when they say that, the first clip that ESPN is going to show is that, like, just because it so perfectly exemplifies how hard it is to get an angle on number 28. And it's just like that play to me, I mean, even beyond the 75-yard run and the touchdown reception, which is crazy. And the one you were talking about, he reverses field. I mean, all of that is just insane. But like, I don't even know how to properly describe how impressive just a quote mundane 17-yard run was that, I don't know. It was so much fun to just be a fan and just exist in the space to watch 28 do what 28 does.
If 28 was not the offensive player of the year in the Big 12 for the second consecutive year before this weekend, it would be hard to keep it away from him now, I think. I mean, I don't know how.
Yeah,
I don't know how you don't give it to him.
There's no one else that really would hold a candle.
No. And like I said, if you're a Doak Walker Award winner and you watch that game on Saturday, I don't know how you walk away from that and be like, that's not the best running back I've seen in college football this year. He's the best running back in college football.
Yeah, it's Kenneth Walker and Breece Hall. And like, I haven't watched enough of Kenneth Walker, but I would imagine it's those two and it doesn't really matter who else is up there. I mean, it's two guys that would realistically deserve to have that. But yeah, if you hadn't cast your vote yet, which I'd imagine a lot of guys have already kind of turned their votes in, but if you hadn't cast your vote yet by Saturday and you watch that game, again, it'd be hard to think that you don't put him one and Walker two, or at least if, I don't know how you can be like, hey, can I put like a one and one A? Like, is that cool if can we co-win this?
Give it to both of them. Give them both the award. I don't know. But I think Breece Hall is better.
One wins the Doak and one wins the Walker.
Just the Breece's line, 18 carries, 242 yards. This is an amazing statistic. Breece carried the ball 18 times. He lost 0 yards. Zero yards lost. I don't know if Breece Hall has ever done that before. I'm going to guess not. I don't think that that is even a thing that ever happens hardly if you carry the ball as much as Breece Hall does.
Accidentally, a guy gets like a guard trips and you have like a run through, like something happens.
I don't know if that says more about Breece Hall or if that says more about the TCU defense, which was comically bad at times on Friday.
You could tell. So, little anecdote, I know that I've told it on this before, but on my senior night, it was the 0 degree, -1 degree game, the ice game against Kansas. And there was a TV timeout that the teams come out and then you're like, ah, shit, we have another minute and a half. Like, you get called out too early and you're just standing out there sort of in formation. And there's a Kansas player that's like got his hands in his armpits and he's kind of standing there like with us. You could tell like a thermal underneath a sweatshirt, underneath his pads. And it's just like shivering. And Grant Rohatch and I are back there and I don't remember if it was me or Grant that asked, like, hey, 55, you want to be here? And the dude just shakes his head, like, no. And so, like, they didn't want to be there, like, admitted that this is, don't want to be there. I want the season to be done. I want to be warm. You could tell TCU was in the same boat. Like, if you asked any one of those guys, especially with how Breece was playing, like, if you asked any one of the linebackers or safeties or defensive linemen and you go, hey, man, you want to be here? No chance they would say yes. Like, zero chance. They want the season to be done. They just, it was cold. They were 28's really good. I just don't want to be here. You could see it. Like, That's partly why Breece was able to do what he did, is because there was no resistance. Partly because he's really freaking good.
It was really funny to look at the TCU sideline. And there was a point when I think there was four people standing up, and it was the coaches. Everyone else was huddled on the bench.
Heated benches, baby. We got propane. I got a little propane heater going through those. Man, you think a seat warmer, like when you get in your car, you think that's nice. When you put your butt on a heated bench and it's 22 degrees outside, oh, that is heaven.
All right. Breece was not the only running back to have a nice day. Jairo Brock, 2 carries for 41 yards and a touchdown, including a 40-yard touchdown run. That was his first rushing touchdown of his career at Iowa State. Cyclones are in good hands in that room, I think. I think Jairo really knows what he's doing. Yeah.
They got three really good ones. You got Jairo, you got Silas, and you got Sanders. And those three together, they do things very differently. And the thing that I want to see from Jairo Brock, which I think he will get out, it's just going to take a little bit to get out, is right now, I mean, up until that big cut and that, like, he actually outran everybody, his play to that point is he ran in a style like I ran, which is you're looking for contact, your shoulders down, you're trying to get up the field, which is all fine, but I'm not nearly as athletic as Jairo Brock is. And so Jairo, I think he's got to get a little bit, and this is a really weird thing for a running back to give advice or to get advice to, is he's got to pop himself up a little bit. Like, he's got to get his eyes up to see what's happening, and he's got to slow down a little bit so he can actually, like, make cuts like he did on Saturday to see what he's going to do. Because his role this whole year was my role, which is you're going to block, you're going to be in there, you're going to be the physical one. You're going to get 27 snaps a game on offense. But they're not going to be, you're going to get the ball 3 times. You're going to have 7 yards. Like, granted, I had a little bit more like short yardage goal than he did, but I didn't have a Breece Hall that was going to do that. So his risk, I think his eyes have to change what he's looking at, because he is probably, I mean, I really like Sanders and I really like Silas, but Jairo Brock is probably going to be the feature back. And so as long as he can keep his eyes up, but if he's not able to get himself out of that, then he's going to, I mean, I think of all of them, the guy that's the most well-balanced at this point is Eli Sanders, is who runs kind of most similar to Breece in a way that is kind of open. But Silas is like Deuce Vaughn, where he's 4'7" and just super quick. Like, that guy's really fun to watch. But I mean, I hope we can get more of Saturday's Jairo Brock next year, once he kind of goes through the off season being like, all right, well, I'm going to get touches. I got to do stuff with this, instead of it's 2nd and 7. I just need to keep the ball rolling until Breece comes back. Like, that kind of mental switch.
I don't know if you noticed this, but I think it was on the pregame radio show last week. I said, when we were talking about the seniors, I said, if anybody at Iowa State knows what they're doing, Brock Purdy will go last in senior day, in the senior day festivities. And of course, the winningest and greatest quarterback in Iowa State history was the last one announced. And it was, you know, special to see him be able to play one more time as a Cyclone. And he played a fantastic game. He was 21 of 30 for 262 yards and 2 touchdowns. He threw the long touchdown pass to Chase Allen on Chase's last play at Jack Trice Stadium. Mm-hmm. That was really cool. And to see the emotion that he put out there, I mean, there's not much more to say about Brock at this point, man. Like, he just is, he was Brock. And, you know, we made this comparison before, but, you know, 15 is like what 31 was to Iowa State men's basketball, you know?
Yeah.
And in the prior era. And, you know, I know we don't do anything with the numbers and stuff like that, like what we do in basketball at Iowa State, but man, if there was ever a group to figure out a way to do it, this is probably the one. Like, I don't know how you can put a kid in number 28, how you can put a kid in number 15, how you can put a kid in number 88 and be like, good luck, kid, live up to that one.
Well, shoot. I mean, if you look at the numbers that preceded them, 15 and 28 should just be done right now, like point blank period. Cause you have Seneca Wallace and Brock Purdy, and then you have the Davis brothers and Breece Hall. Like, no one should wear those numbers again. I mean, just put 28 next to 28 next to 28 in a ring of honor, and then put 15 next to 15 and then put number 8 up there. And then I don't know what else do you need? Like, the fact that Charlie got to go out catching, I mean, comical. We talked about, you talked about TCU's defense being comically bad. It's 3rd and 6. Where's the ball going?
It's going to 88. It's going to 88 every time.
They would single cover him with a nickel who's about 5'11". And I would laugh because it's a catch tackle, sure, but it's 3rd and 6 and you pick up 12. And then I think he had maybe 5 or 6 receptions. 4 of them were first downs on a 3rd down.
Yeah.
Like, okay. At some point, somebody should look at the defense on 3rd and 7 and say, you know what? Let's double cover 88. Let's leave anybody else open. Let's see if anybody else can get covered. We're going to double cover 88. And they never did, which is a comical miscarriage of defense to not do that.
At this point, I wonder if anybody, it's like people were just like, well, I don't think it really matters that much. If we double cover him, he's probably going to be open anyway, and they're probably going to throw it to him regardless. So at this point, we might as well just try and cover everybody else too.
Yeah, fine. Just throw it to him. Whatever.
Yeah. 5 catches for 65 yards for Charlie. Xavier Hutchinson, 7 catches for 107 yards. X will be a first team All Big 12 selection as well. Breaks a single season record for receptions with 82, held by Tracy Henderson previously. I mean, X might have just put together the best single season by an Iowa State wide receiver in a considerable amount of time.
Yeah, and there's been some good ones in recent history. I mean, Todd Blythe might have something to say about that, but even guys like Lazard.
Even if he does, I don't care. Even if he does, I don't care what Todd Blythe has to say.
It's fine. Yeah, screw you, Todd. Between Hakeem and Allen, like, those guys didn't have as consistent of game after game after game after game production like X did. And even when he became a second option, like, the thing with those guys is they were always the first choice. There was nobody else to throw to. Now, granted, when Hakeem was there, like, Charlie started to come up a little bit. Like, you had a little bit, Deshaunte Jones was there. But like, and even Allen had Hakeem on the other side, but Hakeem didn't know what he was doing yet. And like, Matt Eaton's around, but there's no other like truly dominant receiving threat. Where Charlie Kolar, like in the Oklahoma game, Charlie was the number one option. And it's happened in multiple games before. It's just the most recent one. Well, X is totally fine being the second choice. And he's really good at doing just underneath drag route, quick little slant, like something that's not the primary receiver that's going to be run off. And also, I think he deserves half a touchdown on Breece's 70 or 75 yard or whatever the distance on that was, 80 yard run. I don't remember.
Mm-hmm. It was 80.
But he deserves half a touchdown because he was going to get a safety and then saw Breece pop out the back door, threw the brakes on, and then just started. I mean, he got 0 to 60 in like 10 yards and was essentially able to stay between the secondary player and Breece without blocking in the back, without getting in Breece's way, and being able to escort him down the field. Without that, there's no way, because without X doing what he did and just being like, hey man, touchdown, and like kind of jogging and letting Breece do the work, Breece would have to cut back. There was another TCU defender that was probably going to be able to catch him on that cutback, and no touchdown. But dude is so good and so comfortable, again, being the second option or doing the little dirty things like blocking and running down the field. I mean, all that kind of stuff. That's what I think. That stuff is going to get X a shot in the league somewhere, because he is comfortable being a second option or in the slot or as a wide receiver, like a true wide out. That guy will play on Sundays, as will a lot of other guys on this Iowa State roster.
Yeah. A couple of those guys, Mike Rose, 6 tackles, 2 tackles for loss, pass breakup in a quarterback hurry. Mike became the second player in Iowa State history to finish. Well, he will finish his career as the second player in Iowa State history to record 40 or more tackles for a loss in their career. Anthony Johnson had six tackles, a tackle for a loss in a pass breakup. Greg Eisworth with six tackles, a tackle for a loss, an interception on senior day. It seems like Greg is like had popcorn remnants on his hands at times. So to see him get an interception, and it was actually like a phenomenal catch in the end zone to be able to get the interception. It was one of those things where you're like, man, it's about damn time. It was the LeBron Jordan or the LeBron James gift where it's about damn time after he won it with the Heat. That's what it was for Greg Eisworth to get the interception. Gary Vaughn had six tackles, Jake Hummel six tackles, and Will McDonald, of course, gets another sack in, you know, who knows how many more times we've got a chance to watch him play. If he comes back for another year, he'll be the Big 12's all-time leader in sacks by a considerable margin. So it's been fun to watch those guys. They're going to play a lot here in the future, but we'll never get to watch him play again at Jack Trice Stadium. So made Friday pretty cool.
Yeah. And a lot of the seniors, and who knows, I mean, some might elect to take that COVID year and come back. We don't know. But I almost feel like there is a passing of the torch kind of where like the expectation is, we're done. Like as a group, we are giving the baton to the next generation to run with it and see what they do. So I don't know. It felt like there's going to be more that don't come back than do come back, kind of independent. I mean, I saw Zach Peterson was recognized. I'd be surprised if he doesn't come back. A guy like that, I would expect to come back. But I mean, I would imagine the majority of people are going to be done after this year and just say like, all right, man, we did our thing. We got to go out the way we want to go out. Hang them up.
All right, man. Do you got anything final? Any final thoughts? I'm sure we'll do a pod next week to talk about a bowl game, but otherwise, I think we're getting close to time to ramp down here on football and random things and let the Christmas elf take his time off.
Yep. Got to 6 months to just sit in an office and just stare at a ceiling and dream of better days. No, I think the bowl game conversation is really interesting because there is a chance that Iowa State goes to Orlando or Houston, which we kind of expect, but if not super unlikely events happen, San Antonio is not out of the realm of possibility. So like, that's a thing we'll know. By the time we record this again, because they're going to announce it on Sunday. So we're going to know where we're going. Cyclone Fanatic will likely have at least something figured out or what there's going to be bull travel or whatever. We'll leave that to Chris. But if Oklahoma State wins and Baylor makes a respectable game out of it, instead of if Oklahoma State wins and Baylor gets blown out and it's like 56-0, they kind of lose the respect of being able to do this. But if Oklahoma State beats Baylor in a respectable game, and then either Cincinnati or Alabama loses, then Oklahoma State's a playoff team. And even if, I mean, maybe they even jump somebody, I don't know. But if they get in, then Oklahoma would be a two-loss team, which would be likely in the top 12. And the only losses would be to Baylor and Oklahoma State, which are good losses, and they have good wins on the rest of the schedule. Then Baylor and Oklahoma State would likely both be New Year's Six teams, which would then automatically disqualify them and kind of bump them out of the Big 12 bowl rankings, which who does that leave then as the first representative to the Big 12 bowl? Iowa State. That is San Antonio. So
Oklahoma. Granted, there wouldn't it leave Oklahoma?
Oklahoma and Baylor would be in the New Year's.
Oh, okay.
Iowa State would theoretically be the San Antonio representative. Now, granted, it's going to happen, but there is a possibility that San Antonio, Orlando, or Houston. So those are the ones that I would imagine Iowa State's going to be considered for. So we'll know by next Monday.
Anywhere but Orlando, please.
Please. You and me both, sister. You and me both.
Anywhere but Orlando, Florida. I'll go anywhere. I'll go to Albuquerque, New Mexico, Las Cruces, where I think Jerry Kill was already at part of the game the other day when they had it fourth and short at the 50-yard line, and he decided to punt it anyway. he's already thinking about his office in Las Cruces, man. All right. It's been another fun episode of Football and Random Things. Oh, programming note. I should have mentioned this earlier. We're going to have a second episode of Football and Random Things this week. I'm calling it an effort Effort with Jay Jordan. I'm going to record that this afternoon, so you guys can look forward to that on Tuesday, and we'll look more into the future of Iowa State football with Jay here on the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast Network. Until next time, it's been Jared Stansbury for Jeff Woody. Have a great week and enjoy the first week in December.